Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the
Good evening, everybody. This is Dave Briglia with Making the Play. Welcome to episode 10. Tonight, we're going to be changing things just a little bit. We've been focusing mostly in our previous episodes on mentoring, coaching, and getting into teaching as well. But now we're going to talk about some of the big kids here. We're going to talk about business because, again, in the end here, you want to make work feel like play. And we've got somebody here, a guest, Justin Miller. You with us, Justin?
Yes, I am, Dave.
Excellent. Justin has been in business quite a while, and he's not very old. We'll get into some of those details, but he is the president of Profit 911, a business consulting, and he has been starting jobs since he was age 14. He's got a really good outlook on things in terms of trying to make sure there's ways to do business so that you have more time for yourself. There's always the bottom line is always important, but what I really liked about Justin's approach to it was what's important to you. And if that's more time, there's some motivation. So Justin, how about giving a little bit of background about your story, because it's a pretty good one, how you've gotten to where you are.
Yeah, happy to. First off, thanks for having me on tonight. And as you said, yeah, I listened to some of the past shows, and we're going to take a turn here tonight. We're going to turn towards the fun side, not as serious as normal, but a lot of good content still. So as far as my story and business and work goes, it really started when I was like 13 or 14 years old, which is too young to employ except in the world of agriculture. I live in the Midwest on the border of Illinois and Iowa. And my first job was detasseling corn. Now, does that mean anything to you, Dave? I don't know what part of the country you're in.
That's pretty close. I'm from Chicago. I went to school in central Illinois, and friends that went to Iowa. So I have driven probably across your neck of the woods more than once going to Iowa City. So, yeah, a lot
yeah.
of corn.
So what this is, and it's slave labor, for lack of a better thing, they send kids out into the fields, and you pull the top part of the corn plant off and throw it on the ground. Why there's a machine that doesn't do it, I don't know, but this still goes on. It's one of the only jobs you could get at that age, and I think I made $4.25 an hour or something. But stuck it out, and at the end of that season decided, yep, there's no way I'm going back and doing that again. And I took all that money and I bought a couple of big speakers, sound system speakers. And I started what was going to become my main source of income and employment for 20 years at that point, at the age of 14. And that was a DJ business. And I ended up supplying disc jockey services and entertainment services to weddings and first to junior high schools, because that's what age I was at that point in time. Started DJing weddings when I was 15 before I could even drive. And it's funny, I look back now and I wonder what, you know, the people thought when I showed up and was a young guy. But they were always happy by the end of the night. And throughout the years, I grew that business, and I ran it from obviously my parents' house to start, but through a dorm room. I ran it out of a townhouse. I ran it all over the place. I think we were the only dorm room with a credit card terminal and a fax machine in it at the time. And I continued that business, and I grew it and started employing my friends when I was in high school. And eventually, anyone that's been down the business path, you run out of friends that want to work eventually and have to learn, you know, the business side and employing people and hiring and all that. And we started that in 96 is when I started that company. And then just earlier this year, actually, I sold it. So we were in our 21st year, and I sold that business as an operating entity. With, you know, inventory and staff and the whole nine yards, to focus on my other business, which is Profit 911 Consulting. And the reason I did that is because what I enjoy more than anything is the business side of the business, and it's more enjoyment for me helping a lot of people in that aspect in their business. So I get to play like 20 different games at once instead of one. But that's kind of what I'm up to now is that. And you'd be surprised, relevant to the show, that mainly I do marketing consulting, but it always comes back to people. The biggest problems and advantages in these businesses are people. And my little portion of marketing greatly expands when human beings get involved.
Yeah, and that's exactly – you mentioned a couple of things there, which is that it's difficult when the business side becomes a people side. And then, yes, if you go to Justin's website, you'll see some of his blogging on there, and they'll have various topics. And they are business and marketing oriented, but if you find, you know, the real talking point, it's always about people, whether it's trust – or knowing what you want from yourself. So that's why I was really glad to have you here on the show. Let me ask you, so now you've also, in addition to starting that company, truly let it blossom, able to then, you say, sell it to have an emphasis on something you like even more. You've also done written some books and done a lot of appearances on TV and radio. I'd like to be curious as to, you know, how that's gone over years from, again, to somebody that is now a business consultant. What types of things have people been most interested to hear from you?
Yeah, so the media appearances all were from a marketing angle, pretty much. That's the intent and why I was out there doing that. And I taught, you know, what I was doing as I was going through it to those that were following. So I have spoken and written books on a number of topics, all areas of interest. And you can actually, if you find what I've written, you can kind of follow my progression as it went along. So I have a book I published on wedding receptions. It took kind of some of our knowledge there and packaged it up. And the book really is about how to get a lot of people together and treat them right and provide an experience for them more than anything else. That's what that is about. I wrote a book on hypnosis. I was actually a stage hypnotist for about 3 years. Flew out to Las Vegas and was trained how to do a stage hypnosis show, which for those listeners that might not be familiar, that's where someone hires me to come into an event and I gather up volunteers from the audience, put them on stage, do a hypnotic induction, kind of put them into a little bit of trance-like state. Although if you're thinking of what you see on TV, completely different. And we do a funny show. We make them do funny things for an hour. So I wrote a book on that because a lot of people are curious in that, which is all just behavioral psychology. It really is at the core of it, which ties in perfectly to what I do in the marketing side. It's all about influencing people to an outcome. And the book I wrote for the marketing side is called Profit 911, hence the name of the business, Profit 911 Consulting. And it's kind of a hodgepodge of a lot of different tactics for businesses to implement to get more customers.
And these are what I think, again, find really interesting is that's a, you know, it's a winding path you took to get where you are. I doubt you would have ever charted that course.
but no. In retrospect, the journey is often strange.
It is, but it sounds like, again, but looking how one connected to the other, it looks like it's being offered to you.
Yes.
Kind of embraced it.
Absolutely. And there is some core commonalities. As much as those three different topics and books sound completely different, there's a lot more commonality than you would think.
Well, and with that said, let's get into some of those things that you've talked about, because again, you know, the first time we spoke on the phone, I mentioned about the crab mentality. It was one of the things on your website, and it immediately caught my attention, immediately connected with it, and it's one of those things that you've got good stories. They're visual and they connect very well with people. So clearly, again, through all that you've done, I just think it's one of the things you have to offer. So tell us a little bit about the crab mentality and how people can recognize it and deal with it.
Yeah. So for those that aren't familiar, well, this is one of the things I don't want to say teach because it's a negative thing, but it's something I make people aware of because we do it whether we know it or not. So the crab mentality, the basic concept is that if you put a bunch of crabs in a bucket, the crabs individually could climb out of the bucket, or they could even help each other get out of the bucket. But instead, what happens is they claw each other down. They pull each other back in the bucket, and none of them get out to the point where they would even die. which, you know, sounds kind of gruesome, but in a less literal way, we do that as human beings. Anytime someone makes a step out of line, tries to make strides for greatness, or just tries to do something different than the norm, we tend to, you know, shun them, pull them down, tell them it can't be done. And, you know, it's just a big King of the Hill competition, you know, or if I can't have it, they can't have it, is the simplest way to put it. And we see this in all kinds of areas. The most obvious one for business owners right now where they run into this is Facebook groups. We're all members of Facebook groups for whatever we enjoy or vocation we have, or hobby or sport or anything. And I see it all the time. I see someone post something they want to do, and immediately 10 people write, "Oh, I tried it, didn't work, can't be done." And I like to go in there and stir the pot up a little bit and write, "Well, it can be done. I've done it, or I'm working with this client that's doing it." And immediately, rather than taking that as it can be done, you know, 10 more tell me it can't be done despite my experience. So what I have to make people aware of that. Otherwise, they're never going to try anything. Everyone's going to shoot them down. They're going to get bored. They're going to get scared. And they're not going to shoot for greatness. So if you can see that coming and try and, you know, put a bulletproof vest and ignore it, it helps a lot. And even if you are on the wrong path, you know, there's lessons to be learned on that path too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely what I'm doing now. I still have my day job as an engineer, but this was something that actually came about just in getting actually into the marketing side. I'm actually now back full technical, but before I got into the marketing, business development side so much, there was a lot of people connecting, and I liked it until it got me, you know, away from the actual technical part I enjoyed so much. But it left me with the ability to, again, connect and kind of draw things from people. So yeah, it's one of those things where it can be pretty tough on the path to go to, but yeah, we got to try. I mean, that's the whole thing. We tell the kids that, but then as adults, somewhere we stop believing that. And you mentioned about, you know, your clients to, you know, get a little thicker skin here to kind of deal with the naysayers. But what about when they are one of the crabs? How do you bring them around to kind of not just send people off, but to look in the mirror?
So that's a real tricky question, because I do my best to not hang around with the crabs, and I would suggest others do the same. But I realize that can be almost impossible. How do you realize when you are being the crab, other than awareness? I think it's just really being aware of human nature and our own tendencies. Because let's face it, we all kind of get jealous. We see something we want or someone else has it, and we get jealous. I think the way I've personally gotten over that is, you know, I've worked with enough business owners one-on-one to know that what they display is not necessarily what their life is. So let's put this in social media terms, I guess. You know, what someone's Facebook profile looks like probably doesn't resemble their actual life. Or it's, you know, it's the highlight reel of their life, right? So when I speak with business owners in a group setting, what they share is their successes. When I get with them one-on-one, I get to pry more and be a little more blunt and direct, and we figure out what the real situation is. And a lot of times it's not, you know, as much rainbows as it sounded like before. But if we don't get there, we can't solve the underlying issues. We can't get them to where they want to be.
And, you know, you mentioned you've been talking about Facebook and things like that, which reminds me, again, another aspect here about what it is that could you know, make you have that naysaying attitude that if I can't do it, it's because it can't be done, or there's a trick. And you talk about the media right now, because I mean, it's good to be informed. I mean, you talk about that as well, that the best thing you can do is to be informed. But we all walk around with this, 3-ounce device in our hands that can connect us to anything and everything, whether it's friends or trash talk or propaganda, you know, whatever it is, in the form of news. But you mentioned that the media, this is what I just quote from one of your things, the media is trying to destroy your life. can you go into that just a little bit?
Yeah, let's talk about that. So obviously, A, they're not trying to like destroy your life, but they are trying to get viewers, and this is what gets viewers. So there's an old saying in the newspaper business and the media in general business, if it bleeds, it leads, right? Check your 10 o'clock news at night, you know, the first 5 minutes is everyone that was shot or in a car wreck or something like that. People that are trying to be leaders and stay above it, they've really got to go on, you know, if you will, a media diet. You got to be careful how much negativity you let into your mind because it will destroy you. It'll destroy your productivity. It'll destroy your optimism, which is huge for business owners. You have no point being in business if you're not an optimist, I guess, unless you want to bet against the market. As far as media, let's ignore the political media that we have more so than normal right now because of everything going on and new president and whatnot. So even if we ignore all that, which is a lot of media coverage, granted, even without that, everything's just complaining, negative, 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 negative. Now, so you know, I don't watch a ton of news, but I do see it. The last time I was completely disconnected was my wedding and honeymoon in Mexico 7 years ago. That was great. I had no cell phone for 10 days, and it was great. But I will tell you at this point, I do have some firm guidelines in place that came in place from my entertainment business, my disc jockey, my wedding business. There came a point where I started putting staff members in to insulate myself from the negativity. And when I say negativity in this aspect, I just mean kind of the annoyances of owning a business. And you know, we had guidelines that my cell phone shut off at a certain point at night. Also at some point, which may shock some people, I made the decision I wasn't working Saturdays anymore, which sounds really strange with a wedding company because 95% of what we did was Saturday. So obviously I had to adapt and, you know, put staff in place and insulate myself. So anything that stops you from getting where you want to be, you need to A, realize it first, B, kind of call it out in your life, and C, put a plan to minimize it so you can get ahead. Because yeah, if you take negative in, guess what? You're going to put negative back out.
And you just mentioned, you know, to call it out. And I have heard this now, and it's probably just because I got myself tuned to it. You know, like we say, but everything I think that you're looking for is around you somewhere. It's just a matter of tuning into it. And I heard, you know, whatever it is that you fear, whatever it's troubling you, you got to give it a name. You know, maybe not an, you know, an actual name, but until you do something to make it real, like say, call it out, you just convince yourself it's not worth doing. And clearly you've got, you know, three good reasons at home, you know, for not wanting to work on Saturday and shutting down the phone. I've also, I've got my kids, but and I think this is important too for people because those who want to, you know, do more for their business or they're afraid to move forward. One of my biggest concerns is the neglect of the family. And it can be, you know, a fear as an excuse not to move ahead, but, you want to talk a little bit about, you know, you've got a young, growing family, how you've been dealing with the success that you have. I doubt that you run at half speed, but it sounds like you definitely have some boundaries up. How are you balancing just besides the, you know, the phone shutdown? Are there other things that you're doing?
Sure. So, yeah, I'm married and I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old son right now. And when the 4-year-old was born, you know, that's a trigger for a lot of people. And I coach a lot of people. They have that first child and it changes their life. And it did mine as well. But I already had an immense value placed on my personal time, like an incredible beyond what I earn per hour value. My time to me is very sacred. My privacy during that time is very sacred to me. And interruptions really annoyed me. So with that in mind, a long time before that first child was born, I started transitioning the business to serve me rather than me serving it. And you're right. When I'm working, you know, I try and work at full speed. Am I 100% productive? Absolutely not. But I don't work as many hours as most people probably do. One of the benefits to being self-employed, you know, I try and only focus on the tasks that are of most value to me and bring me the most return. And to do that, I have to hire a lot of help, which comes in many forms. It comes in employees, contractors, online service providers, So I get help from a lot of different directions, and I couldn't have done anything that I've done without that help. It also has given me a lot of these lessons into, you know, the human psyche, because I counted it up when I sold the company, and we had right around 100 employees that had worked for me at one point or another in the company that I sold over the years. So we had a lot of lessons in management there, and different lessons from every person through the door, for sure, and all learning lessons. And you know, sometimes you're able to model your life and your boundaries off what you see other people doing. Sometimes you have to learn some things the hard way. Fortunate for me, you know, I learned that value of my time, and weekends in particular, after working them for 10 or 15 years, Saturday is something now that means something different to me. And I even had an offer here for a job, which is, you know, scary to me to think job. And they had, I think they saw that I did not have weekend availability, and they asked about that and said, okay, you know, this job does require some weekends. Is that okay? And my response back was, yes, some weekends are fine. All weekends are not. And we very quickly got to the bottom that they really wanted to own my weekend time as well and have me on call, which there was no way that was going to happen. I have a firm boundary on that. So bye-bye, you know, on to the next one if someone else wants to try again. So, yeah, it's knowing what you want and setting boundaries and enforcing them. Because anytime you put that out there and you put a boundary out there, something's going to challenge it immediately. I coach people through this all the time. As soon as you put something out there, you're going to do the first step towards moving towards your dreams, whatever. And you know, maybe you write a post on Facebook about it. Someone's going to challenge you immediately. The universe is going to throw something at you and put it in your way. So you got to figure out what you're really serious about and what's worth fighting for.
You know, and that is one of the things one of our earlier guests, Rick Jarrow, who does his thing is creating the work you love. So, you know, you too see life the same way. And he said exactly the same thing, which is he calls them the guardians, that, you know, when you're about to go somewhere important to you, expect the guardians to show up and really try and tempt you not to. That's the challenge. Because if it's important to you, it probably is a big deal. And somewhere you'll probably start thinking of all, again, the temptations of, you know, working hard for the sake of working or not trying at all, as opposed to making the business work for you. So, yeah, I think you're, like I say, when you look at the family that you've got, you look what you've done. Sure, you may have had a, oh, I don't know, 10-year head start in the business world on some people, starting at 14. But nonetheless, I think those are the things that we also want to make sure we're conveying to the students, you know, as you're coaching people, those of you out listening right now, that, you know, the kids you're coaching, you're trying to get them into schools to get jobs. If you're mentoring someone, it's not just about working hard in quantity of hours, because I think that's a something we still all drag around. Would you agree, Justin?
Sure. I mean, I err on the other side of working too few hours. But yeah, most people think that, well, we'll just say pay, whatever pay may be to you, it's going to be different in different circumstances, right? But most people think that's directly related to number of hours. If I could just work twice as many hours, if I could just practice twice as many hours, you know, I would be better. And in almost all cases, that's not the absolute truth. It's not a direct correlation.
I would agree. And the group that sounds like you've had a lot of experience hiring, that actually I've had a lot of enjoyment working with, but gets a bad rap, although a lot of the jokes, they are funny, but it is the millennials that they're too entitled. They're not willing to put in this time, but at the same time, well, maybe they've got it figured out that it is more important, because you know, I've always appreciated the people you work with who could work hard, whether it was from 9 to 5 or 7 to 7. You know, sometimes you have those long days, but then you knew that they were enjoying themselves outside of the office. And so let's tell me about some of your experience with employing the millennial generation.
Sure. Let me dodge it for a second because you said something I don't want to skim by, and that happened to be about kind of separating out work and life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the big buzzwords always were work-life balance recently, right?
Right.
And I think I grew up more with like a workaholic father who was always working. So I swung the opposite direction, you know, and it was as much personal value time as possible. And probably more than anyone I know, I have that balance, and in my mind, I can separate them out. But what we're seeing now is more people in business have to find a way to integrate work with their life. They're really having to do that to have enjoyment. So I'm kind of like a holdout on that, and it's working for me, but I'm seeing a push towards integrating that and people finding things that work well with each other and not compartmentalizing anymore. So I just wanted to get that out there. But yes, let's talk about millennials. So the funny thing about millennials is I don't identify as one, but when I was reading like the actual definition, I'm on the oldest year of being a millennial. So I guess I am a millennial and I should switch my pronouns at this point. But throughout, you know, those 100-ish people that were employed, I can count on one hand the number of them that were not millennials and were aged out of that category. So I have a lot of experience employing them. And obviously, yes, they get a lot of stereotypes and bad raps. And in general, if you wanted to go with masses, you know, those are well-earned and correct. But I'm telling you, we don't need the masses for most things in life. And we focus on the outliers or making people become an outlier, because I truly believe that's how you become successful in whatever field you want to be in. So let's just kind of go through them. Like, millennials are lazy, right? They don't want to work. They don't want to show up. They want everything handed to them, yada, yada, yada. They want everything now. Sound familiar?
Well, it does for me. I'm Generation X, and I was, you know, a teenager in the early 80s, late 70s. And I think they called it all those hippies from the 70s and leftovers from the 60s, which is the interesting part. Because I think, you know, that label's been around forever. It's just after a while, you know, we all get old enough when I start labeling, you know, the next generation as being lazy. I'd throw that out there as well to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen that for sure with different generations. Now, the funny part is, yes, I had my fair share of people that came through the doors that fit that stereotype, and they were gone very quickly. And we implemented something new every time because, you know, I was learning a lesson as an employer with each one of those as well. So a little bit of an annoyance, but a blessing in disguise. But that being said, there are still so many, even in that demographic, that are exceptional and make exceptional workers. So, you know, I guess the biggest thing to us is to be able to separate them in our minds and filter through and figure out who's who or who wants to be who and put them on that path. That's what people that overly generalize lose out on. They lose out on the exceptional ones. So I put, you know, all kinds of systems and strategies in place to get the good ones while everyone was complaining they didn't exist and wasn't looking at all. Because quite frankly, you know, that is the age group that was going to work the type of jobs in general that I was giving out. They were, you know, as I call them, stepping stone jobs for a lot of them. You know, this was their job during maybe high school, college, a little beyond, and then at some point they went beyond. Obviously, there's tons of people in the field older than that, but they tend to be owners and not employees. So we would put things to market to them a little different. And one of the things I'm training business owners on right now is hiring assistants, like admin assistant type positions, which to me is the easiest person in the world to hire. But I'm having to change their mindset for them to get the right people because they're used to advertising with an ad full of negative things they're not looking for and specific qualifications and tasks. And if you look at like job postings anywhere, you'll see that because it's kind of the core of a job posting. But the way I teach people to recruit staff is to hunt for the personality type that has the qualifications and have them just show you the qualifications, which is completely different. So when I write an employment ad, for instance, one of my successful ones was now hiring part-time office ninja was the title of that, which first off has some personality in it. So it tends to attract, you know, people that are actually fun, which was a requirement in our company. And I took about a page and a half, if you were to print it out on a regular sheet of paper, to describe what the perfect person acts like in their daily life. You know, we wanted someone organized, so some of the jokes that were only halfway joking were like, you know, you have your clothes sorted by the color spectrum in your closet and yada, yada, yada. Which is, you know, you don't see that in an ad normally. But this resonates with the type of person we want, which was the outlier, and that was regardless of age. But I will tell you, it skewed young when we started writing ads that way.
Right.
And then as far as once we got them in the door, you know, the millennials really want to know what's expected of them. In my experience, they want guidelines. They want boundaries. They don't want to be babysat necessarily. You know, they want to be given the resources to do it, and they don't necessarily want someone looking over their shoulder and micromanaging. They want to feel they're important to the team, and they're contributing, and they want to be given that chance. So we give them what they need to succeed. We give them the guidelines they have to operate in, and we put it out there pretty clearly. So that's the upfront. And then we find out the ones that can't do that, and we have to either get them back on course or remove them. But there's a couple other categories of people, too, and things that came up. Clarity was super important for the young people we employed, especially ones that were more money-motivated. You did not have anything ambiguous about what they were making for what they were doing. They wanted a very clear path there, clear connection, what was expected, what they're going to get. And you did not screw around with that, which you might be thinking, yeah, well, that's all age groups. But I'm telling you, in particular, this one, because you will lose them. You'll lose them mentally really quick with just even a minor mix-up. We also had the ones that, you know, had the negative stereotype. I still remember we had one out of all those years that's mother called them in sick to work, which didn't go over too well. And those of you coaching probably can that probably resonates with you quite a bit.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm just picturing that one. But, you know, all the things you've mentioned that they're looking, the millennial generation is looking for, those are all things we all appreciate.
Yep.
And those are all things, if we were, you know, saying what we want from our supervisor, however high up the chain we are and however high up somebody else is, we would rate those things pretty high. If it was, you know, what would you want from your, again, supervisor? We would all be asking for those things. So let me ask you this, because I've been thinking about this quite a bit, is it that they're asking for it because it's not coming through, again, the interaction with supervisor, mentoring, or just, again, a culture of where there's much better interaction, whether it's in sports, school, college, or, you know, early part of the job? Are they asking for it because it's not being presented and we were so used to it being presented, we didn't know it was being presented? We just thought it was always – maybe we thought we were a little too more capable than we thought, you know, 30 years ago.
Sure.
We didn't realize we are getting all that type of support from somebody else.
I think here's the biggest thing and the biggest difference that I've seen is if we flip it on its head and those things are missing, the millennial's gone. And depending on the situation, that may be mentally or maybe just quitting or physically gone from the program. But they're, you know, one of those characteristics was, once again, they want things now and they don't have patience. They have patience as long as they see the path, but if it's not there, they have so much less patience than anyone else. They'll just be gone. You're going to lose them. And if that same person, given the right guidelines and structure, and they could see the light, if you will, could have been a rock star for us. So I think that's the biggest difference is, you know, there's extremes. The extremes are a lot more obvious.
Yeah, and that makes sense what you just said there, that they want to be able to see the path. And they've literally grown up in a digitally enhanced way of, you know, whether it's movies, even on just regular TV, there's not as much that's left to the imagination because it's literally, you know, been digitally created, you know, within the show. And there's an appreciation for it. But at the same time, like I said, a lot of us, we had to kind of picture the path and you got used to it, not Maybe that's part of it as well. When you just say, yes, I appreciate the clarity of path, so that's what I want. And that it's kind of hard to knock somebody for that. I mean, when you think about it, but who doesn't want clear direction? Say, I see it. I have a vision to believe in now.
Well, sure, you know, but it's not so clear cut, right? So,
right.
And I got called out on this. I was having lunch with an old acquaintance of mine that was starting up a business, and he was telling me what he was doing, and I was sitting there and thinking for a while. I'm like, you know, there's got to be an easier way for you. There's got to be an easier way for this. His response was, well, that's spoken like a true millennial, isn't it? Like, yeah, you know what it is. You know, if I may be right on this one, you know, maybe you just have to keep doing it the hard way, but, you know, let's explore that other way. So, yeah, that's probably the biggest difference is they have all the information already, right? It's not about knowledge anymore. Why can't I just, you know, why can't I Google the path to success and just follow it and get success? And you can in some fields. And if you think it that way, that's, you know, the field you should go into. You probably don't want to be an entrepreneur, I can tell you that. There is nothing guaranteed in my world. And by the way, I'm the black sheep of my family. I'm surrounded by cousins that are doctors, lawyers, you know, anesthesiologists. I'm the black sheep, and wasn't throughout school. It has nothing to do with knowledge at all. But, you know, I chose a different path than they did. Theirs is a little more well-defined. Enjoyment in either path is up to debate. so that's where the individual comes in.
Well, I think that's like you say, it's they definitely see things differently, but to not want to do things easier. I mean, I felt guilty about that up until probably about 5 years ago about, you know, it was you should be working 50 to 60 hours. You don't need to be in the office, but you should be really putting about that many hours a week. And I was told this by people 10, 15, 20 years old, if this is what it takes to get it done. And I bought into that for a while. I now work 40. And when the workload is higher, like I might even go back, the office is only 2 miles away. I might go back tonight, just keep checking some stuff for the junior staff, just so I can keep things moving. Cause that's my choice. And I've had a few weeks where, you know, my wife said, wow, how late did you work? I said, oh, I went back, you know, after dinner and the kids are in bed. And I kind of got into a groove and I worked till actually like 1:30. But those are rare now. And that's where I feel like I'm accomplishing something. And I have no problem now, you know, doing 8 to 5, you know, with a half hour lunch or hour lunch in there. But that took a lot because that really is the way we were told that's what it takes to get ahead is
sure. And to me, I hear that and I'm thinking, oh, 60 hours a week. That sounds absolutely terrible.
It was,
but you know what?
I didn't know it. It was.
Yeah. Well, here's the difference though, is I've worked that many hours a week or more, but it was when, you know, I was seeing results that justified it and I didn't even think about it,
right.
You know, to borrow from the show itself, you know, when we were on fire, we were on fire. And, you know, at that point it didn't matter. Or in my business, we had people that, you know, we were doing special events that sometimes were 20-hour days, which, you know, sounds crazy, but that was the work. It had to be done, and we just didn't think about it because we knew the work. We knew the guidelines. We knew what we were working in. We knew what we were getting. So as long as it was laid out there and there was a path, and it's the same way in any new business that I launch. You know, if we see something working, you know, we go at it full force. But once we're in the groove, the typical work week, if the typical work week is going to be 60 hours a person, it's the wrong business. Or we
right.
have the wrong systems in place.
Absolutely. And that's what I've gotten back to, which is, again, my wife's like, wow, you worked till 2? I said, yeah, you know what? It was kind of enjoyable. The office was quiet. I was doing work that I like to do. And I was doing it because the rest of the staff, you know, they're all young, except for a few of us are a little bit on the gray side, but they were cranking it out and I was checking their work. So, well, you know, if they're going to work that hard, I'm going to, you know, stay ahead and check it and make sure I'm around to answer, you know, questions. And like you said, then the show, it's making the play. It's like turning it into playtime. In fact, for my website on Complete Theory, the tagline is making work feel like play. It's like those days where, you know, you were just, didn't matter what you were doing, you know, building house, making a snowman, you know, playing sports in the front yard, whatever that is. Those are the things where you are exhausted, but it never felt like work. And it's not the hours and it's not the effort. It really is that connection with, like you say, what is your time worth? And when it's, you know, what you're doing is worth your time. That's it. But just clocking in the 50 because, well, you don't want to be labeled as, you know, lazy. I think that's crab mentality. Everybody trying to drag everybody back down. You know, that, well, if I can't think of something better to do with my time, well, I'm going to make sure you can't either.
And I have no problem with the lazy label as long as I can show results. Then, you know, then I'm justified. I can be as lazy as I want.
Yeah, that's called efficient. Last I heard, that's called efficient, you know, ingenuity. Yeah. That's what we're all looking to do, you know, truthfully.
Well, a lot of the business owners I work with are still in, you know, wedding fields because that's where I came from. And they enjoy the output of their job, the product of their job. So if they're a florist, they enjoy, you know, doing the floral work. If they're a disc jockey, they enjoy playing the music. If they're a photographer, they enjoy the photo shoot. And what gets them bogged down and what starts to burn them out is the business, the work side of the work.
Right.
Everything that happens outside of that, which in a lot of cases is the majority of what's going on. But thankfully for them, that's not the side the customer really cares about. It has to be done, but that's not their primary concern. And I can help them put automation systems in place to handle a lot of that. So, yes, it's the efficiency, and it's figuring out how to either pawn off or move away or get done some other way, or in a lot of cases just not do things that don't matter.
And do you find that they have, before they find that relief of, wow, this really is easier, this really is better, do they feel guilty sometimes in saying, hey, get somebody else to do the books, get somebody else to take care of that? Is there, you see,
no, they don't feel guilt, but they'll put every obstacle in their way possible to doing that.
Ah, okay.
So if we had to get someone to do the books, oh my goodness, we have to hire that person. We got to interview them. What if they screw it up? What if they have access to my financials? You know, what if they leak out what we're really making? You know, there's all these fears that are going to try and stop them in their tracks. And that's why it's really important that as best I can, I give them a clear path and show them other people's successes in that field. Otherwise they will hold themselves back. Absolutely. It's self-sabotage, right? You know, we sabotage our own success.
Right. We all get what we want. We just don't realize what it is, you know, good or bad we've been wanting, which is to, you know, hide our fears, you know, to have something to complain about. You know, it's easier to complain about not being able to move ahead than to have said, I tried it. And
yeah, you got a guaranteed result if we just sit around and complain.
Exactly. Right. I mean, that's, like they say, quitting is the only thing that you're guaranteed to achieve just by trying. You know, that's, there you go.
And we can't be scared to fail, right? You know, I've failed more than I've succeeded.
Right. Oh, we've all failed more than we know. That's the other part, you know. Which leads me to the last thing we were going to talk about, which is action, you know, versus perfection. You know, not wanting to go ahead there. I think we're getting into a little bit, but that's another one of your topics, which is, you know, not yet. I'm still getting things lined up. I'm not ready to go. Well, they may not be saying there aren't things to do, but they're planning those things, or at least talking about supposedly those things and not moving ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this is the difference between having a great idea and the person that made all that money off that great idea you had 20 years ago. We've all had those genius moments, right? Someone else had the idea and made money off it. And the whole concept is to just get it out into the world, which, by the way, now is easier than it ever has been to do so, to get our ideas and businesses out into the world, or our greatness into the world, whatever it may be. But we put the obstacles in the way. We think of every reason not to. We think it has to be perfect. We're embarrassed if it goes out the door with typos or something. Like, here's a good one. I have a program that teaches people how to write a book in like 6 weeks with minimal hours per week, and to get an entire book done. And I took a group of entrepreneurs through that. I think there were six of us in the group. And I think two actually got the book done, because the others just self-sabotaged beyond help throughout the process. You know, they wanted it to be perfect, or they didn't want to follow the direction to get the desired outcome, or they were concerned about editing the book before they wrote anything. If you look through my books, even now that I've published, I guarantee there's typos and grammar and all kinds of stuff. And it doesn't matter. The message is still good in there, and it's out into the world, and it's done wonders for me. So a book's a very obvious, concrete example of that. But we have it in all aspects of our life. You know, we're scared to do that, you know, first workout, or we're scared to that first day of the diet. I'll start the diet tomorrow, right? And it's all about just taking that first action and kind of failing forward as we go, and correcting the course.
And there's some training, some leadership training that John Maxwell I'm doing, and their main thing is, because they have a formal training, but they've said, oh, no, you should start doing it right now. And they just say, just jump and, you know, find your wings on the way down. That's their whole thing. And it's a very structured program, but they keep saying, just go earlier than you think, whatever it is, as opposed to, you know, some groups like, you really need to get this down cold, you really need to do it. Their whole plan is, you know, they come up with, again, just teaching you how to not go for the ultimate, you know, crowd to get in front of, or the ultimate snare, like find the most meaningless one, you know, and go do it. You know, if that's what it takes, you go help somebody, don't worry about it, but you gotta do it. And that is hard. Have you taken any of these ideas and talked to younger people? And by younger, I mean, you know, not the working millennials, but have you ever talked to any high school groups or even middle school on some of these ideas? Because these are really important, you know, for every kid starting at, you know, let's say age 14 that might want to start their own business, you know, even if they don't. Have you had the opportunity to talk to anybody younger?
Yeah, so middle school, not so much. But high schools, I would take every opportunity I could to get into a classroom. Which, yeah, took a few different forms. Sometimes it was just as a guest. I volunteered for Junior Achievement, teaching business in there and trying to, you know, my bias was I was trying to give them stories of small business owners, because my experience was always the large business employee was teaching those, and I wanted to show them, you know, they can just do what they want in life.
Right.
And I've been in some other volunteer aspects with that age group as well. So yes, and I will readily admit, it's very hard to get them to see the value in the idea. And the reason more so than any other, I think, is because they can't immediately relate it back to their own life. So we have to try a lot harder to find examples that can, you know, that makes sense to them and their world and their experience. So the examples that you and I are talking about on this call would not necessarily fit perfectly with that age group, but the lesson is, and we can adapt it over.
Yeah. And I think that is one of the things that, I'm glad to hear that you do that. Cause, again, the purpose of this show, which is a great example of with today's technology, I basically talked to somebody who told me about somebody. I sent an email, and an hour and a half later it was, we've got an opening on Coach on Fire Radio if you want to do the spot. And I just said, okay, because it to me, it seemed like to say no would have just been sabotaging myself. So again, the show here is to, now that it's going, is to tell people that we can't be reaching out too much. Again, high school, middle school, regardless of what, you know, your angle is, the fact that, you know, I'm sure you're able to have a nice icebreaker with the DJ component of it. That's something they can relate to. But are you able to, I guess, any of your clients, encourage them to, you know, interact a little bit more? Or is that something that you find that it's a hard sell in the business world to get them to, you know, start connecting with the next set of people to enter the working world, hopefully as owners. I mean, I was raised by a small business owner, very small, like three people, and many were relatives during the busy season. So, what are you seeing out there? I guess this, in us really trying to connect more, like you've been able to do.
Yeah, I mean, so most that I'm working one-on-one with, we're honestly too busy getting over their own fears and things holding
I got
them back. Because we all have them, and that's my value to them, is to be able to see kind of their blind spots. So no, we don't dig to the next level necessarily, but there are other people that do specialize in that.
Yeah, well, I would say at the very least, though, you've gotten those people in the position that once they get past all their blind spots, as you put it, hopefully they'll want to start giving back as well.
Sure.
I do want to make sure right now, we got about 8 or 9 minutes left, but you mentioned about your book writing course that you have and some of the consultation. I definitely want to make sure that people know what it is that you do, any events that you might have coming up. So let's, you've been very gracious, talk about a lot of useful things. Let's make it about you, just you for a few minutes. What have you got going, or what are some things that people, again, whether it's websites or anything like that, that they can get in contact with you?
Yeah, so I won't take a whole lot of time with that, and we can squeeze in a little more if we have time, but I would be remiss as a sales and marketing consultant to not tell you some.
Right.
So basically, who I work with is small business owners that have at least 2 or 3 full-time employees, normally less than 30. And what I do for them, the main thing I do is sales and marketing systems and automation for the business. So we talked a lot about, you know, unique value, working a little less, getting life back from their business. So kind of success starts to hurt a lot of business owners. They run out of hours in the day and they need to learn new skills. That's really where I help them the most, and we focus on new client acquisition for the most part. And yes, that takes a myriad of forms besides coaching, you know, like I mentioned, the book writing workshop and some things like that. None of those are currently open for enrollment at the moment, so we don't need to really talk about those. But if anyone actually wants to get in contact with me or kind of see what I do, they can visit the website, which is profit911.biz, B-I-Z. And you'll see some different articles I've written, and you'll get a pretty good feel real quick for what I do and don't offer. And you can sign up for email updates. Or you can just reach out to me. You can email justin@profit911.biz. And against my own teachings, that is my email, and you will get a response from me.
And I can attest to that. And also true to Justin's word, he schedules his time and he prioritizes it. So it really comes down to...
Can we share how strict I am about that?
Yeah, we can actually, because I was late getting some of the promo material for this. And I recall, you know, you saying, you know, your hours. And I said, hey, and realize it. If you can you get back? And you said, I might, maybe late tomorrow night. And honestly, I said, you know, I might not get anything back because this is family time. And actually you did. So I appreciate you making the exception. But yeah, tell them about
And we still would have had a great call, by the way. So this is almost an example, once again, of version done versus, you know, behind the scenes in producing any show. There's a lot of back and forth that happens of what's going to go on. Mm-hmm. So there's not a guest on here that does nothing for you, the listener. And, you know, getting that together can be time consuming sometimes. And if you send me a business email that is not a quick response, like as in I can read it on my cell phone and respond back real quick, it's going to wait till I'm in front of my computer in office mode, because I can't switch gears like that. Even a 30-second response is going to take at least 5 minutes of mental time switching gears, which most people don't think is true until you start paying attention to it. So I guess you can do that right now. Start paying attention to just, you know, switching off. So I like to group and batch activity. You know, I like to just crank through the whole inbox all at once, get that done with, come back again later to it. And I can get a lot more done in a lot less time.
And I think that's a really good lesson that I've actually started trying to do more of, which is, you know, if I'm pinging somebody about something, to just make it much quicker and just say, and not try and explain everything I was going to tell them anyway. Just like you said, if you and I, you know, you emailed me 3 points, I said, yeah, that ought to cover most of the show. And we haven't changed that. You know, we have a little bit for, you know, posting on Facebook and other things like that. But from those three bullet points, which were the three things you and I talked about over, what, maybe 6 minutes or something like that the first time around, that's all we really did need. So a lot of times less is more. But I tell you what, we got 5 minutes here. I got one thing I want to ask you, if you're good with this, if we can do it in 2 or 3 minutes, which is the trap of the familiar. I like that one also that you wrote about.
Sure. So trap of the familiar, I mean, it goes along with what we were already talking about is, you know, change is hard. We put things in our way, but it becomes very obvious if you have a physical routine. So if you go to a workplace, so self-employed people, the quickest example I can give, self-employed people that have offices can get away with, you know, driving to office and sitting there half the day doing nothing and telling, you know, their spouse they were at work working all day. That's the familiar, and we can get into that habit and be very hard to change. But we got to be really careful about that. We got to, you know, keep expanding our horizons, do things we're scared of, get in front of groups. So, you know, I sound very confident social in this presentation environment, but if you put me in a group of 30 networking people that are all kind of there for a meeting, that's not my environment. But I have to put myself into it because there's benefit to doing so. So we got to push ourselves, push our boundaries in all kinds of ways. Might I even recommend skydiving? That's a fun one.
All right, you're gonna have to keep going. Have you gone skydiving recently?
Not recently. No. Nope. Right now it's excluded on my life insurance, so it's not happening with kids. But once that gets rewritten, then we can renegotiate that with my spouse.
Excellent. Again, Justin Miller, you can reach him at justin@profit911.biz. And his website is profit911.biz. And again, I think that some of the key things here, again, that you've talked about, it really just has to do with if it's fun, it's not going to feel like work when you are doing those 50s, but you also sure won't feel guilty when you're putting in, you know, 24 hard hours and maybe 8 or 9, you know, just kind of seeing what's going on in a week. It's a better way to go. And again, maybe that's something we can work into all the other things we do here, because I also would tell people I was a business person at the age of 14. I had the lemonade stand, at a gear factory. My mom would look out the window, could make sure while I was hanging out with all these factory workers in their break that she could see me selling lemonade when I was about 9. And then I was doing, of course, lawn mowing and house cleaning. But there's definitely something about that at some point you realize the work is good, but it's got to be for you. There is a nice selfish thing. I'm not sure if you'd agree with that, but, you know, it is all about you and your time and how immensely valuable your hours are, regardless of, you know, what you may charge or be getting paid. You can probably add a zero or two for what it's really worth to you some days.
If I had to sum it all up, I help people find the quickest path from A to B.
And B is their decision, correct?
Yep.
And
I might have to help them find that, but that's what it is. It's all theirs.
Right. And you're a little bit, you've been a little modest in some of your writing, where one of them is you can't help anybody. You maybe just kind of help frame up that they've got the answer of what B is.
And it's different for everyone.
It is. Well, again, Justin, I want to thank you again for a good chat tonight. Everybody, like you say, if whether or not you need his help, or maybe he has inspired you to move ahead a little bit here and do some things for you that you can have a pretty successful life by doing more with less grind, if you will. So again, Justin, thanks so much for the time, and look to have you back on the show again sometime.
Happy to do it. Thanks, Dave.
All right. Thank you. And everybody, again, we will continue to have weekly shows throughout most of the summer here. And you can find us at complete3.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. And our replays are always available on Coach on Fire. Have a great evening.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want.